නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So as you all can remember, we were discussing 112th sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, that is called Chabbisodhana Sutta, particularly meaning as sixfold purity or six types of purifications. And actually we were discussing five types of such purifications mentioned in the sutta. Even though sutta title mentioned about six types of purification, in the Theravada Majjhima Nikaya sutta it only contains five types. So the commentary mentioned that due to the, say, oral transmission, one seems to have lost. By the way, interestingly, there is a parallel sutta available in the Majjhima Agama, has everything, so it has sixth purification. So that is what actually we are going to discuss today. Anyway, the theme of the sutta is very much like a verification. Say someone is declaring that he is an arahant. So then Buddha mentioned you can basically acknowledge it, but don't immediately reject it. Don't immediately accept it and don't immediately reject it. Rather, you better ask several questions. The first section was related to the four ways of expression, how one is dealing with various languages, dealing with various communication while he is living in the world and while he is handling his senses, how he has managed himself so that various fetters, taints are slowly fading away. So what is the methodology that you have applied? So that is the first question. The second question is related to attachments of to the five aggregates of clinging. So typically, as you all know, five aggregates, five clinging aggregates are the way that Buddha analyzes this so-called person, a being, and the whole experience, and how one has managed or used these five aggregates so that one's mind is cleansed, one's mind is completely detached. So what is the methodology that you have applied? So that is the second question asked from this person. And then the third question is related to the six elements, the four great elements plus the space element, and then the sixth element as the consciousness. So altogether we have six elements, and when one is handling these six elements, how you have properly managed so that your various desires are abandoned. Now this is related to the elements. And then after receiving a satisfied answer, so one can accept it, but don't stop there, you better ask another question. Then the fourth question is related to the six senses, basically internal and external. There are six senses using which we are communicating with the outside world, dealing with the outside world. Through the eyes, we are seeing forms, through the ears, sounds, through the tongue, the, say, flavors, through the nose, various odors, and through the body, various tangibles, and through the mind, various mental objects. So this is how we are dealing with the whole outside world. This is how we are experiencing things, and how one has managed himself so that the defilements are faded away by a proper managing of these six senses. So that is the question asked as the fourth question. And if a proper satisfactory answer is given, then Buddha mentioned, okay, you can accept it, you can happy about it, but don't stop there, you better ask another question. So the fifth question is in a way little subtle. The previous ones we are somewhat familiar with, the fifth one is somewhat subtle. So how you have recognized various I making, mind making, the subtle conceit of I am happening within yourself, and how you have abandoned that. So that is the question. So there the whole descriptive answer is given, how has entered the order, how he has basically practiced virtues or morality, and then he basically has developed awareness of all activities, that is the sampajanya, and then he has maintained fair amount of sense restraint. Now altogether the restrainment side, the morality part, is well explained in this sutta as well. And after explaining that gradual development, the sila sikha, then it is explained about the samadhi sikha, how one has abandoned five hindrances and then was able to develop samadhi, develop even the jhana, and that is the samadhi sikha. And then ultimately about this, the panya, how one has recognized four noble truths and again the various stains, and knowing that, one is able to understand, okay, while maintaining that kind of a liberated mind, temporary liberated mind, one is able to understand how this eye making, mind making, and various conceiving or concealment has happened. Now that is in a way kind of a gradual explanation is given, rather than immediately telling, okay, I have just recognized eye making, mind making. So kind of a gradual development is explained. So that indicates that this understanding of this eye making, mind making is not so easy, because it is so cheating, and it is very much like hidden in the mind, and we always feel that there is a person, there is I am. Likewise, so we basically feel that kind of inherent existence of a particular person. So recognizing that feeling, recognizing various subtle thoughts, promoting that self-view is something difficult to understand. So therefore, kind of gradual explanation is given, gradual step-by-step explanation is given, how one has practiced sila, how one has practiced samadhi, and how one has recognized the Four Noble Truths in oneself, and then slowly abandoning all these eye-making and mind-making. So that is all actually the Theravada, this Majjhima Nikaya 112th Sutta explains, and then Buddha mentioned, in this particular sutta it is mentioned, okay, you can admit it, you can accept if all the six questions and answers are given, and then you can accept, okay, you are a perfect one. So it is a blessing that to be with you. So likewise, you can acknowledge. But on the other hand, there's an interesting argument or interesting discussion we can thought here. So even now, everything is explained in this sutta. Now, if one wants to act like an arahant, if one wants to behave like an arahant, so he can study this sutta and even memorize all this information. And ultimately, if someone is asking or cross-questioning, so he can easily answer these questions. So then someone can do it. Then someone can pretend that he is an arahant. So is it the meaning of this sutta? But on the other hand, so when one is trying to verify another person, if he is only a person who lacks or who only has book knowledge, doesn't have any practice-oriented knowledge, how he is going to verify another person? Now these are very interesting indications which we can pay more attention into this sutta. So just by learning this sutta, if one is trying to answer the questions, so that is not the purpose. It is very much like cheating. And if you know about the Bhikkhu Vinaya, there are four kinds of parajika. So the fourth parajika is related to that kind of a situation where one is falsely claiming that he is an arahant, just to cheat others, just to earn reputation, earn various gains and fames. So that is Buddha mentioned, if one is doing that with that kind of an ulterior motive, then he is no more a bhikkhu. At that very moment, whenever he is behaving like that, he is very much committed a parajika offense so that he no more even a bhikkhu. And Buddha even mentioned that he is the gravest thief in the world. Now, on the other hand, so if one, on the other hand, try to go and ask this question from another person, so the questioner also has to have fair understanding. So if we simply say, okay, what is your situation, how you dealt with these things, and if he only has the book knowledge, the questioner only has some theoretical understanding, so there is no such proper verification going on. So in a way, we can recognize this sutta as some sort of a both ways. So the questionee or the answerer, the so-called arahant, and on the other hand, the so-called verifier, the who is asking the questions, also have to be in a way properly behaved. But on the other hand, if one wants to verify oneself, say you are an honest practitioner, you are a diligent practitioner. Now, if you want to verify your own practice, did I achieve these things? So if you are doing some hard practice, so probably this sutta give a fair indication how you can verify yourself. So rather than me going and asking this question from someone else, so if we want to really practice, if we want to become fully enlightened, so actually time to time we can really recognize, verify, am I inclined to this sutta? Am I in line with this sutta? Am I going in parallel with this sutta? So this is an interesting way that we can look at this sutta. So rather than using this as a kind of a quality control thing, probably we can use it as our own kind of a verification, just to check whether we are following the same path. Now we can move towards the sixth purification indicated in the Majjhima Agama Sutta, and that is related to the detachment of four nutriments. Probably you have heard about nutriments. So Buddha explains four types of nutriments: the kabalinkara ahara, that is the chattaro me bhikkave ahara bhutanangva sattanang tithiya sambhavesinangva anugahaya. So that means for a person who is going to get birth, for his support, and again to the sustenance of the existing or already born person. There are four types of nutriments, Buddha explained. Katame chattaro, what are those four? Kabalikaro aharo, olariko va sukumo va. Now that is the edible food, which is either gross or subtle. And then passo dutiyo, that is the contact, that has the second one. Manosanchetana tatiya, the third one is mental volition. Manosanchetana. Vinyanam chatuttang, the fourth one is the consciousness. Now these are very interesting way that Buddha explained how our birth happens and how our sustenance of this life happens. So we have to have these four types of food, nutriments, in order to continue our life. Now the first type of nutriment is quite familiar. So that is the edible food. So that is what we are quite familiar. In the morning we have our breakfast. Maybe then we have the main meal, lunch, and then at night we have dinner, and time to time we have short eats. Now so many things are there, food, drinks, and vegetables, many foods are available. Now are we really having them just because we are quite hungry, or we want to nourish our body, maintain our body, or are we having food just to enjoy, just to have some fun? Are we using food for some various other purposes, to beautify the body, to make it quite stronger, so that we appear like the strongest person, and we don't want to have a kind of a lean body, we want to have a kind of fat body. So are we having food for such reasons, or else are we having the food for proper reasons? Say I am continuing my practice, so without this food I can't sustain this body, maintain this body. As a support to the practice, I am going to have food. As a support for my brahmacharya life, say the celibate life, my spiritual life, I am going to have food. So without food, this body can't sustain, so I am going to have food because of that. So likewise, one can recognize proper reasons and improper reasons. So if one is having food for improper reasons, then in a way we are developing more defilements. Probably one can have food thinking that I am the only one who is more fortunate, others don't have this sort of food. So since I am quite lucky, quite fortunate, I am having all these nutritious food, but others don't have. So you can do such kind of a comparison even. And probably you can be even greedy of food. And on the other hand, you can even compete with others about the food. So likewise, with respect to food, we can have a lot of defilements. So that is why Buddha especially advised monks to contemplate while eating. While having your food, Buddha asks us to contemplate. So this food is only I am partaking just for sustaining this body, not for any kind of an entertainment, any kind of beautification of the body. Rather, this food is taken as a kind of a medicine, just to maintain the body and as a support for the celibate life, as a support for the spiritual life. So that is the reason that I am having this food, and this is nothing but elements. So likewise, Buddha explains food contemplation so that we can avoid the arising of various defilements. And interestingly, Buddha has given a very interesting simile regarding this edible food. So that is the sun's flesh. Eat it as a sun's flesh. So this is a very kind of a strong simile given here. So Buddha takes a kind of a person, actually a couple with young son. Now they are going to cross the desert. So husband and wife, and then their little child. And they are going to cross the desert. While in the middle, they run out of the food. Now they have to go another half of the desert, but there is no food. As a result of that, all three are going to die. Now husband and wife, mother and father, now they are talking to each other, discussing, what are we going to do? Are we all three going to die? Or what another alternative available? Then they decided, okay, we'll kill the son, we'll kill and get the flesh of this son, and then we too can survive at least, then we'll cross the desert. And Buddha asked a very interesting question, and actually Buddha mentioned, so while eating their own son's flesh, the dear son's flesh, while beating their breast, where is my son? Where is my dear son? While crying, while lamenting, they are eating their son's flesh. And Buddha asks, do they have any kind of a greed towards that flesh, to that food? Then monks say no. Do they have any kind of a desire, thinking that I am entertaining this food, enjoying this food? The monk says no. And do they have any kind of any other conceit that partaking this food? The monk says no, because they are taking that food only for the mere crossing over the desert. So likewise, Buddha mentioned you need to consider about the edible food. So this is a very strong simile given here. So that is the way that Buddha explained, just for crossing the desert, just for crossing the life or the samsara, that at the moment I am having this food not to enjoy the life, not to entertain. So that is how Buddha mentioned that the edible food has to be understood. And if one properly understands the meaning of the edible food, then Buddha mentioned lust for five chords of sensual pleasure is fully understood. Now this is another very interesting indication. So if you are able to properly understand edible food, the purpose of having edible food, the way of having edible food, how you are going to have edible food, how you are earning money and all sorts of things to have this edible food. So likewise, whatever the information related to the edible food, if you understood it properly, then Buddha mentioned you can abandon all the five chords of sensual pleasures. Now, edible food is actually in this world, in this sense world. And again, this is edible, the gross or subtle. So these are the food that we as human beings and other animals are enjoying or using. If we understand that properly, so Buddha mentioned, in the proper perspective if you have, then Buddha mentioned you can abandon all kinds of five sensual pleasures. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned that means you are slowly abandoning the lust and anger, raga and dosa. That means ultimately you become a non-returner, anagami. So that is the proper understanding of edible food. You can see how much or how far Buddha has taken us using this food. So if one has this kind of a thorough understanding about food, Buddha mentioned he can abandon all the sensual desires pertaining to the sensual world, sense world, and ultimately one can become even an anagami, non-returner. And then contact. Now this is all these four nutriments are explained with respect to their respective simile. So those similes are very strong and very interesting. Now the contact. Now through our eyes we are trying to see forms, through ears various sounds, through nose various odors, through the tongue various flavors, and through the body various tangibles, and through the mind various thoughts, mental objects. And every time we have something, either we hear something, either we see something, either we smell something, either we taste something, or we get some pressure or some kind of a touch. If none of them are working, then at least we have various thoughts. Mind is occupied. So there is no excuse. There is no any kind of a rest, any kind of absence of all these, or rather kind of a relaxation. Every time, all these six senses are very much like tormenting the person. Now Buddha giving a very interesting simile here, he mentioned it is very much like a flayed cow, a skinned cow. Whenever a flayed cow is going to a particular place, say if it is going closer to a tree, then whatever the creatures available or abiding in that tree come and start to nibble that particular cow, because it has no skin, so everything is open. And on the other hand, say if it is going closer to a river or go inside a river, and again the fish and all the other creatures, they come and eat the cow because there is no coat. On the other hand, if it is going simply to a ground, an open ground environment, then again various other say flies and birds and all, they come and again eat. If it is lying down on the ground, then what, ants and all the other creatures in the surface of the earth, they come and eat. So there is no excuse. So Buddha mentioned, so this is the way you need to understand about the food of contact. So we are born with various senses and we are having them, and maybe they are healthy. And when they are available, so we have no excuse. Every time they are in operation, every time we listen various sounds, every time different, say, forms, and odors, then smells, the taste, various tangibles and thoughts. So very much like tormenting. And Buddha mentioned, if one properly understood the this contact, the food contact, the nutriment contact, Buddha mentioned that way you may understand three types of feelings. Because contact conditions feeling. Passapaccha vedana. Now every time a contact happens, a respective feeling going to happen. So if there are certain kind of contact which is conducive to produce pleasurable feeling, then the pleasurable feeling arises. If there is a contact going to happen which is conducing or conditioning what you call the neutral feeling, then the neutral feeling going to happen. If there is contact happen which is producing painful feeling, then the painful feeling going to happen. So likewise, the contact does not stop there. Whenever contact happens, the corresponding feeling is going to produced. So if one is investigating contact, if one have proper perspective about contact, then definitely one can understand the resultant types of feelings. So in a way, we can recognize what this Buddha is trying to mention here. So in one sense, contact conditions feeling indicates the patisamuppada, idappacceta. So slowly, carefully, if you are examining this whole different kinds of nutriments, contact, actually you are able to understand how conditionality work, how dependent origination or co-arising going to happen, how each and every contact producing some sort of a feeling. So that is one phenomena. And on the other hand, when one understand feeling, probably one can understand how feeling conditions, craving, tanha, and even the upadana, grasping. Now, one is carefully operating at this kind of a very subtle and deep levels of understanding, deep levels of insight. So more and more one is careful or paying attention to different kinds of contact whenever they are happening, and every time something is available, either one is seeing through eyes, hearing some song, sound through the ears, some sort of a smell, some sort of a taste, some sort of a tangible. If nothing is there, at least mind is occupied with various thoughts, mental objects, which produces some kind of a feeling, either neutral, either painful, or either pleasurable. So that also is conditioned, and that can even produce craving. So likewise, you can see how this whole conditionality works within oneself or within one's mind, and ultimately get on to some sort of a suffering, unsatisfaction, or restlessness, agitation. Every time that cow going closer to a tree, to a river, to a playground, to an open space, so it is getting tormented by all the different kinds of creatures. So similarly, even though we have senses, so if we are not properly guarding them, if we are not properly managing them, if we are not diligent about them, if we are not properly using them, so it's very much like we are being tormented. So this is the way Buddha mentioned how to recognize the nutriment of contact. Now, why is it called a nutriment? This is another way now we can understand. Actually, the edible food as a nutriment we can understand. Why contact is considered as a nutriment? This is also an interesting way that we can look at this. So we always want something, don't we? Always we want to see something. We are very much like dependent on that. I can't stay in a very gloomy, say, completely dark place without seeing something. And you want to hear something. Maybe time to time at least a song, time to time at least someone's voice. Suppose that you are being taken to a completely far away place, there is no one there, and you are simply abandoned there. So you may even cry not hearing a voice. Maybe even you might even love to hear someone that you don't like, because you are not hearing any voice for a long time. Now that is very much like what happened when a person is taken to the prison So they are assume that they are taken to a prison and imprisoned in a very far away place. There is no any kind of a communication with the outside world. You can't see others. So if such kind of a situation is there, you may die because there is no nutriment coming through the senses. You can't see much things. You are in a cell and you can't hear songs or any kind of a sound. No one is coming closer, except assume that you are being given some food only at the regular time. That's all. And there is no smell other than the bad smell of the cell. And food is also, say, even the food is nutritious. Still you can't survive. And you have nothing to do. And you have only very limited tangibles. And your mind may think various things. Ultimately, you even go crazy and you may die. So basically, these senses are very much like we are using as a way of absorbing various nutrients. So that is why Buddha mentioned here, the contact is kind of a nutriment. So we need such kind of a contact. But if you properly understand the operation of contact, you may understand three types of feelings. And if one understands three types of feeling properly, then Buddha mentioned there is nothing more to do. You may attain arahantship. Now you can remember in the first one, the edible food, if one understands properly, he may become anagami. But here, if one fully understand the contact, he may attain arahantship. Now we go to the third one, mental volition. Now volition, so volitional activities. So this is something we always motivated to do. So I want to do something. I want to hear something. I want to talk to someone. Or I want to think. Why don't you think? Someone come and tell. Why don't you think about it? So they are promoting thinking, intentional thinking. Now intentional thinking, either due to your own kind of an energy, your own initiation, or someone else's persuasion, kind of a thinking, kind of a doing or talking. So we are always motivated to do something, either through the body, through words, or through the mind. Now this, even though we feel like, I mean, it is very much like extrovert, actually we are having some sort of a satisfaction through that. And we are accumulating karma, of course. And on the other hand, through this doing, through these volitional activities, we are having some sort of a sustenance in ourselves. Say someone is asking you, don't do anything. You can't stay simply without doing anything. Actually, that is what the most difficult thing. Even when someone is developing one's vipassana, one may reach some kind of a stage where you should not do anything. You have to avoid any kind of volitional activities. Very difficult, because we are used to do something. So when you are fairly motivated, used to do something, and when you are reaching kind of a state where you are expected to do nothing, it is very difficult. Now, on the other hand, sometimes mind is thinking which we don't want thinking. And sometimes we are doing, motivated by various intentions happen in the mind which we really don't want. And sometimes we are talking, maybe against our heart, against our conscience. Now, on the other hand, our intention is fairly conditioned. It is, even though we tell that I did that, I am the one doing it. I mentioned that, I talked that. I am the one talking. I am thinking, I thought about it. Now, even though we refer like that, do we really have the complete control over our deeds? Is it really me that doing it? Is it really me which is talking? Is it really me, solely me that I am thinking, here thinking? Or is it someone else is guiding us? Is someone else is taking for a ride, taking us for a ride? Is someone who is sort of dictating us? So this is an interesting way that we can look into. Now, even though we tell that I am doing it, I am the one who did it, is it purely through my intention? Or is the intention is a kind of in the absolute form without depending on anything? But unfortunately, it is not the case. Our volition is completely dependent on our various kinds of defilements, various kinds of inner traits. So whenever we are doing some kind of an activity through the body, it is not really I am working. Rather, so many other things are conditioning the mind, conditioning the volition, and I am very much like a victim of that whole process. Say for example, you are simply going to a supermarket and now you are going to buy a kind of a product. Say you are going to buy a soap, piece of soap. Now you are going to a particular place and you see a particular brand and you buy that. And probably you can tell your husband, your child, or your wife, okay, I bought this particular soap. This is what I want. I bought it. So we refer like that. But that very purchase is fairly conditioned by so many other things. First of all, maybe it is conditioned by the amount of money you have. On the other hand, the likes and dislikes operating in your mind, various advertisements that you have seen, and various other marketing going on with respect to that particular product. Maybe someone else's persuasion, someone else has given kind of an opinion to you. So likewise, so many other conditions are there, reasons are there for you to buy particularly that brand, particularly that product. So each and every activity that we do is therefore, it is not completely say pure in that sense, rather they are conditioned, influenced by various other factors. Now with that understanding, if we can look at the simile that Buddha is given here, so it is very interesting simile. So Buddha mentioned, now there is a charcoal pit filled with glowing coals. By the way, there is no flame or smoke, but the charcoal inside the pit is glowing, they are burning. Now, a person know that, a particular person know that this is the charcoal pit, there are glowing charcoal inside. If I go closer, if I'm being dropped there, I'll even die. I may get on to a severe pain. Now, with that, while that understanding is available, two strong people catching this particular person through his limbs, and now dragging him towards that charcoal pit. Now, the thoughts of this person is always away from that charcoal pit. Now, he know that this is a very, I am going to get on to a disaster. So that is the kind of an understanding he has. But unfortunately, these powerful, strong two persons are dragging him towards this charcoal pit. So Buddha asks us to look at the nutriment of mental volition, chetana, like this. So basically, if one have an understanding that this is how it has to be, this is how it has to be pure, but unfortunately I am being dragged, I am being driven, I am being enslaved by various other factors. So Buddha mentioned this is the how way that you need to understand about the mental volition. And Buddha mentioned if one understood mental volition properly, he understood three kinds of craving. So volitionally we are doing various things and the craving is operating internally. And we are doing various volitional activities based on the requests of that craving. So craving is very much like our companion, our partner. So partner is telling what to buy. Partner is telling what to do. Partner is telling what to tell. Partner is telling what to think. So I am a victim, I am a slave. Partner is no one, that is the craving. Tanha dutiyo purisav. Diga madhana sansaran. Craving act like the partner, not only in this life, even this whole sansara. So if one properly understand this mental volition, Buddha mentioned that you may understand about craving or three types of craving, kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. So that understanding is not something little. You may, if you understand that properly, fully, you attain arhanship. So the fully understanding of, therefore, the mental volition, the nutriment of mental volition, makes you fully enlightened. Now the fourth one, fourth nutriment is about the consciousness. Now you can see we are going slowly to more and more subtle nutriments. We started with gross edible food, then we get on to contact, that's also not that difficult to understand. And we just finished about the mental volition, that is somewhat difficult to understand. And now we come into the consciousness, that is even little difficult to understand, but it is quite interesting. Now consciousness, one important activity of the consciousness is the distinctly knowing something. So there are so many things available and your mind is interested of one thing, and then your mind go and latch with it, lock with it, and ultimately establish there. So you are able to select something, choose something, accordingly you go and establish there. So now the name and form is there, growing there. Name and form and consciousness have a very good relationship, and now they are having a good company, and now they are growing there. Every time we see something through our eyes, so this thing can happen. Our mind, if it is interested, it's going and more and do various kinds of examinations, explorations, attachments. Ultimately, the consciousness is growing. Whenever we hear something, so we are interested, we are sort of getting closer to it. So the consciousness is getting fed. Whenever we are, say, smelling something, again consciousness is established there. Suppose you are tasting something. So there are also, so if one is interested, so you go and closely examine that, you are attached to that, getting closer to that, so the consciousness is established there. At the beginning it is very much like the tongue consciousness, but it doesn't stop there. It may vary or evolve to the, say, the mind consciousness, tongue consciousness, and now it is growing. So whenever we go through various sensations, tangibles, whenever we are interested, we are able to look at it closely, we get latched with it, attached with it, and the consciousness is fed. And if those are not happening, then enough food is available inside the mind, various past food, various future food, everything is now taken to the table and consciousness is having a feast. Now likewise, every time, consciousness can't stay alone. You can't maintain pure consciousness. The pure consciousness may be quite secluded. There is no any kind of a cinema going on. There is no any kind of a fabrication going on. There is no any kind of mental objects going on, or various signs, mental images going on in the mind, if the name and form is absent. So if the name and form is present, that means there are various signs available in the mind. Mind is fairly occupied. There are various thoughts available. Mind is fairly occupied. So that indicates consciousness is having a great feat with the name and form. So you can see how important it is to maintain a kind of a spacious mind. A mind free from thinking. Mind free from any signs. Mind free from any marks. Mind free from any, occupants. Fairly free mind. Very simple mind. Quiet mind. Cleansed mind. Clear mind. Pure mind. Nothing is there. but you are fully conscious. The conscious ability is there. Other than that, mind is not occupied. Now, these are very interesting way that we can look into the mind, because typically we know about a mind which is constantly thinking. We know a mind which is constantly occupied. We know a mind which is constantly occupied with various mental objects, maybe something related to the past, something related to the future, various projections, various imaginations. Always mind is occupied. But how about a mind completely pure, which is still capable of being conscious, but not occupied with anything, not attached with anything, not crowded with anything, maintaining its clarity and kind of luminous. So that is the type of mind that Buddha is very much like indicating to us. A mind which is luminous and has no any kind of a narrow restriction. The mind has its complete pervaded freedom, no attachment, no defilement, not coloring, not conditioned. So that is the type of mind that Buddha is indicating us, pointing us. Now, unfortunately, assume that if that is the case, the mind has to be, the consciousness had to be, but unfortunately at the beginning, from the very moment that we wake up, we start hitting the mind. We start giving food to the consciousness. We start thinking what I am going to do today, what I am going to do next, what I am going to do tomorrow, how I am going to go to the office, how am I going to drive, do I have enough fuel, is it today's fuel quota? Start thinking. Now you go to the toilet and you start brushing your teeth and all sort of things. Now more and more thinking, more and more food to the consciousness. Say you are rashly going through the breakfast, having this and that desires and talk and chat with others. So we are occupying the mind. So mind has lost its freedom. Mind has lost its clarity. Now fully occupied. If you can remember the very moment that you wake up, probably that moment you had some sort of a clarity. Mind was maintaining some amount of a rest. But after the moment you wake up, you start occupying the mind, tormenting the mind, torturing the mind. Now, therefore, throughout the day, we are not keeping the mind kind of a healthy way, relaxed way. Rather, we are constantly torturing the mind. So Buddha, therefore, giving a very interesting simile for the consciousness nutriment. So he mentioned, there is a thief brought to the king by the whoever the soldiers, and they are informing the king, okay, majesty, so this is a thief, so you better give some kind of punishment to this guy. He's a really notorious thief. Then the king order, okay, in the morning you give 100 spears to this guy. And now they actually did that. They hit the person with 100 spears. And the middle of the day, they come and report that to the king. That we did put 100 spears. But the guy is still living. So the majesty, the king, is telling, ordering, okay, give another 100. So during the daytime also, another 100 spears is given. And again at night, the soldiers come and inform the king. So we have given another 100, but the fellow is still living. Then majesty is saying, the king is ordering, okay, give another 100 at night. Now Buddha is asking, what do you think, bhikkhus? Would that man, being struck with the 300 spears, experience pain and displeasure on that account? Then the monks are answering, Venerable Sir, even if he were struck with one spear, he he would experience pain and displeasure on that account, not to speak of 300 spears. It is in such a way, because that I say, the nutriment consciousness should be seen. Now, if we closely look at the way that Buddha is giving these similes, have some very interesting indications. Now, in the contact, Buddha is talking like a skinned cow. In the mental volition, he is talking about a person unwillingly taking to a coal pit. In the consciousness nutriment, Buddha is talking a person constantly being hit, struck by spears. Now, our mind is very much like that, the third one. So we are constantly striking our mind with spears. It may be spears of forms, maybe spears of sounds, spears of smells, tastes, tangibles or thoughts, various mental objects. We are not giving any rest to the mind. We are not giving any kind of a calmness, clarity, relaxation to the mind. Constantly we are occupying the mind. So Buddha mentioned, if one properly understand mind or the consciousness, so Buddha mentioned, he may understand name and form. So you know, in the Patisamuppada, that's a very interesting relationship between consciousness and name and form. Name and form and consciousness, they are interrelated. Vijnana paccaya namarupang, namarupaccaya vijnana. And again, it is mentioned in Mahanidana Sutta. So that is the most subtlest level of wisdom one can have. Rather than looking outside, are you able to look at inside, look at your own mind, how name and form is trying to delude you? Probably you can remember that when we were discussing consciousness and name and form, we have taken a simile of the cinema, and the same thing happens in the mind. So every time we are being deluded by name and form, but unfortunately we are trying to find it out in the outside. So if one understood consciousness nutriment properly, that means one has understood name and form. So Buddha mentioned, similarly, he is no more a worldling, ultimately he become fully enlightened. So fully understanding of consciousness nutriment indicates that one is getting or becoming an arahant. So therefore, these four types of nutriments are very, very interesting and very, very profound. The very first is quite obvious, but the other three are quite related to the spiritual life, quite related to the vipassana, and through proper practice only you can penetrate them. And they are very interesting, and they are sort of thought-provoking. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. And this is the sixth type of purification indicated in the book, particularly in the Mahayana, the Majjhima Agama book, and seems quite reasonable and as a sixth purification. So if one has properly practiced, so he has properly practiced these four nutriments. So with that, I'll conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Thank you very much for listening, and now I open the session for questions. Yeah, you better talk louder. Yeah.
I have a question, Bhante.
Yeah. So there's a question coming from here. Yeah.
So Bhante, does the Majjhima Agama version give the bhikkhu's response in regard to those four nutriments when asked? Because Bhante described the nutriments very well,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't understand if the bhikkhu arahant was being questioned, if he gave an answer regarding them or not.
Ah, I understand. Okay. Those actually I didn't go through that level, so I got only the indication that there's a kind of a detachment has to have with respect to nutriments, but the answer indicated in the Majjhima Agama book I didn't go through.
Okay.
So that's a very good point. I'll try to go through that and need to see whether the explanation actually I have taken from another sutta,
yes.
which is available in the Puttamansa Sutta in the Sangyutta Nikaya. So this, I hope the same answer is there, because this is explained by Buddha, in the Putta Mansupama Sutta, and how one is to maintain proper attitude, proper say understanding about the nutriments, and this is how we need to operate. And if the same answer is given, then we can understand, okay, that he's a proper arahant and something like that. Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite everyone else to participate in the Q&A. You may raise your hand, or you can also send them the...
Okay, nobody wants to have any nutriments?
I'd like to invite Nalinka. You may unmute.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
So, with these four elements, food, contact, mental volition, and consciousness. I mean, it's about somewhat of a suppression that is being spoken about here, right?
Suppression?
Well, it is about understanding it, and it is, you know, it is somewhat of a suppression, right? Like, you hold it back. You're conscious about the type of food you have, what time you have it. But what about if you... Now, I'll give you an example. Say 15 years ago, I would have been very excessive. But that excessiveness, you know, brings you to a point of almost like, you know, you get sick of it, right? What about that approach? Like, I mean, I understand sometimes that does not happen. Right, but you know, this is very geared towards almost like a monastic life, right? Supposed to, say you're in a household, depending on your situation, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, there have been householders who have attained, you know, arahatship. But how does, you know, what about excess? Can you go into that?
No, actually, now, with respect to food, we typically, the advice is you need to have moderate food. You have to be moderate in your meals. It does not mean that you fully abandon and go into some sort of a malnutrition and kind of doing sort of a self-torturing. And you need to understand the food is necessary, and Buddha mentioned sabbe satta aharattitika, so every being is dependent on the food. So it's therefore... As human beings, we need to have food to sustain the body. Now, that is why Buddha introduced the food contemplations with respect to the edible food. Now, how are we going to have food without arousing various defilements? So that is something I feel, if we are sort of training ourselves, slowly we can do. Say, when you are eating, when you are drinking... So if we have proper understanding, so why am I drinking? Why am I eating? What is the exact purpose? Probably, I mean, appear like difficult, but slowly one can do it. And on the other hand, it is not that merely through the food that you are doing. So you are continuing your practice, you are maintaining your sila, you are developing mindfulness, trying to restrain the faculties. So likewise, various other supportive factors are also there. So, and with respect to food, if we do proper contemplation, probably that we can minimize the arousing of various defilements. And the subtle part is actually the other three. The nutriment of contact, nutriment of mental volition, and nutriment of consciousness. So those are the very interesting and challenging part, and at least during the assume that during your meditation session, if one can maintain that, say you are a diligent practitioner, say you practice kayanupassana, say you did say dhatu manasikara, and you are able to understand their impermanent nature. unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. As a result of that, so when the understanding is well, assume that your mind is temporarily liberated, temporarily freed, and you are able to maintain a freed mind, a mind which is free from any association, free from any attachment. So at that moment, that in that unattached, unassociated state, actually we should not promote the three types of nutriments. So from the mind, you are not supposed to think anything. From the ears, we are not supposed to hear anything, or at least not paying attention, not paying interest. Through the ears, or so the, through the eyes, we are not supposed to look at and enjoy things. Because we have come to a state where our mind is capable of maintaining kind of a independence. Mind is unassociated, anisita. Anisita means the mind is not interested of attaching, associating, dealing with anything. So at that time, we should not provide the nutriment of contact. And again, we should not make any kind of a volition. We have to avoid all different chetana. And interestingly, we can say, okay, you have to have a chetana not to have any more chetana. You have to have a volition so that I am not going to have any more volition. So that kind of a chetana. So
but
true.
What I'm trying to say,
sorry?
Does that not happen?
Sorry?
Does that not happen naturally? Is what I'm trying to say.
Can.
Say,
yeah. It can happen. That's why, I mean, if you are going through proper practice and slowly, when things are abandoned step by step, the letting go process has happened naturally, then your mind starts relaxing, resting, and it is naturally not interested of thinking. And it may feel like thinking as a burden, having an intention as a provocation of the mind. Yeah, back to you.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, during the practice, we have to slowly, in a way, familiarize with this state. It could be difficult, but at least slowly as we get on to that anupadana anisthita state, where our mind is not clinging to anything, not associating anything, during that period, at least we have to try our best not to volitionally think anything, not to volitionally do anything, and not to arouse or agitate the mind, not to have any mental object, just to keep the mind quiet, keep the mind cleansed, keep the mind quite pure, calm, peaceful. So that is, in a way, we are not feeding with those three nutriments.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of a challenge.
So it's just about being here, what you're trying to say. That's a lot of tools. Yeah. Okay, Bhante, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Sweeney for the next question.
Teran Saranai. Bhante,
yep.
I was thinking about the sun's flesh.
Mm-hmm.
There must be some deeper meaning to it, because I was thinking, the Buddha said this is to use only until they cross the desert, and mm-hmm. after that we drop it.
Mm-hmm.
So the sun's flesh probably represents Patavyapotejavayo, because then we can understand the contact, the skin, how ayatanas, they can have these chetanas and the tanha and interpatichasamupadanaskandeya, how it connects. Because if we realize that this is just patidyapatejovayo, then even if you have a feeling of sukha or dukkha or dukkama sukha, whichever way we go, we know this is all due to patidyapatejovayo, how I have been conned by vinyana, jumping from like a monkey from one to another, showing me all these magic shows, that it's all Patavyapotejavayo. And then maybe it explains to me why Buddha said na patavi, na patavi, na tejo, na vayo, no apo. Because if you have realized that, and you use it only, the patavi apa tejo is also there only until you cross the desert, then maybe an arahat, that's when the arahat does not see the patavi apa tejo vayo. It's just a natural thing that happens and you vanish. Can this be looked at like that, Pankhi?
No, actually, looking at the food as Patavyapo Tejo Vayo itself is a contemplation. It's a part of actually the contemplation that, there is no person here. Even though I am talking with different types of food, different brands, different names, and nothing there, it is nothing but the four elements. So, four elements are now transacting with another four elements. Here internally also four elements, externally food is also four elements. It's a kind of a transaction between four elements. There is no person here, so it's a kind of another way of looking at the food contemplation. So dasuso pachavekkati, so in the food contemplation, so one can contemplate food in that respect as well. So understanding the body, this very body as four elements and the food also as four elements, reduces one's attachment, reduces any kind of defilements, and basically does the purpose. So therefore, having such contemplation is also correct, and it is also indicated in the typical food contemplation formula, and no harm in doing that.
I just want to say thank you very much, Bhakti.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Thank you very much. Bhante, now you spoke about the four nutriments, and then you, the last one was the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can relate to the contact where you have the feeling, and then you can see the suffering. That is easy. But now, when we come to the consciousness, vijnana paccaya nama rupa and nama rupa paccaya vijnana, we know that is what is in the paticchasamuppada. But how does one relate to that when one is contemplating or meditating? When the mind is still and there is not much thoughts coming in and it is calm, then how do we see this interrelationship between the vijnana and the nama rupa?
Yeah, actually when the mind is not associating anything, not attaching to anything, so that means the vijnana and nama rupa, that link is not properly operating. But only on the other hand, when the mind is occupied, when we are giving some value to that, whatever the mental object appearing in the mind. Now suppose that you are maintaining that unattached state for a while. So at that time, immediately suppose there's a mental image appear in the mind. Now you give a name, oh, this is my son. Now you are able to kind of attribute, kind of a name, kind of a person, an individual to that mental object. Now slowly. So this is the mental object is actually the one part of the name and form. So if we properly define name and form, it consists of five elements or five constituent parts: Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikar. Now this Sanya part is the one now appearing as the mental object, as a mental image. But we get a little feeling also, maybe a little love and kind of an affection type of thing. So that is also there. Now your mind get somewhat jerked. Now because there's a passa happened, contact happens. Previously there was no such thing. But now an indication happened. Okay, there is someone has knocked the door. And now your mind is attending to that particular object. And now you are, after you give a name, after you give a value, now you get caught, you get deceived by this particular whole thing, and the consciousness is now growing in that name and form. Now this is the relationship that now we need to understand. So while there are various other things, or rather say while you are able to wait without that kind of a delusion, that kind of a projection in the mind, but now you are being caught, you are being driven to that particular object. Now name and form and consciousness are very much like interoperating. Name and form is further and further deluding, consciousness is further and further getting attending to that, helping that, and establishing there. So that is how actually, when the mind is empty, we have nothing to understand. We can understand, okay, now name and form is not there, and mind is not my, the consciousness is not manifested. What is available, what is experienced right now, is the unmanifested consciousness or anidassana vijnana. So, but on the other hand, when name and form is present and we getting deluded by that, and we are fed by that, we are feeding that, so that means now the consciousness nutriment is now we are partaking.
Yes. So do we then like then there are six types of consciousness? So is there one separate overlooking all six, like the one that goes into the past and brings things out? Is that a different consciousness?
No,
that is acting like in the bank.
No. That is the name, the mano vijnana. Now,
mano vijnana is divided into six anyway.
No. Actually, the mano vijnana is not the divided to six, but rather say eye consciousness, ear consciousness.
Uh-huh.
So those are separate. But I mean, after
the sixth, mano vijnana is sixth one.
Yes. But interesting point is. Now, though we start with the glimpse of eye consciousness, it is giving more food to the mano vijnana as well. Now, eye consciousness and mano vijnana, the mind consciousness are fairly growing. It happens collectively.
So, when we are talking about the nama rupa and the vijnana, we are actually talking about the mind consciousness, right? In the Paccaya Samuppada, when we are saying vijnana paccaya nama rupa, nama rupa paccaya vijnana, is that mainly the mind consciousness that we are trying to associate with?
Actually, we can't say so, because the six types, all six types of consciousness we can consider there. And because you being triggered by any of those six. And actually there's another later interpretation telling that the consciousness here is the rebirth consciousness. And actually I don't like to get on to that, because that is confusing the whole understanding. So rather we better stick to here the six types of consciousness. So six types of consciousness being conditioned by the name and form.
So now we are hearing your voice, so that is the hearing consciousness. But the mano vijnana also is coming into play, because we are understanding what you're saying now.
Exactly, yes.
So it's playing a part there. So sometimes it can be a positive experience when we are using the mano vijnana, because if we are talking about the elements or the thinking about the Dhamma or hearing about the Dhamma, then that is also a positive thing.
Actually, that's why, I mean, we can't immediately talk about a complete absence of these four nutriments. So that's why it's a kind of a slow penetration of these four nutriments, understanding or detachment. And when you are fairly capable. Say now say after Buddha became the Buddha, now he had what you call the edible food, because the body has to be the body has to be sustained. But how about the other three? So those are the various things that we can think of. Is he volitionally want to do something? Maybe we can say even, I mean now say, when he wanted not to preach, then the Sampati Brahma came and invited, okay, Bhante, don't avoid teaching, please do teaching. There are people who can understand your teaching, so therefore please teach. So the another one came and somewhat persuaded him to teach. Then he, for 45 years, he taught Dhamma. So maybe volitional activities are there. But time to time, Buddha want to maintain emptiness. He dwelled in emptiness. There are times that he completely avoid any kind of an interaction with the other monks. He went for seclusion. And that way he has given a very interesting example how he has maintained a kind of a life without feeding these nutriments or without getting these nutriments. See, most of the time that sometimes he mentioned to Venerable Ananda, I am dwelling in emptiness. So that means his mind is not interested of having these nutriments.
So, as lay people, when we are doing these things, supposing the food, for instance, and we are enjoying food, for instance, then we have automatically made a self, no, Bhante, because there is a self only that we are enjoying, enjoying the food, no? It's just not only karma, it's not only karma, there is a bhava element in that also, no? They are all involved in it.
Yeah, could be, because they are closely related. So you want to enjoy, and that enjoyment has manifested as a karma tanha, as a sensual gratification.
Yes, but there is also, you have already made a bhava then, no? At that time, without a bhava, you can't enjoy it.
Yes. So if we are getting delighted in that experience, that means we are born to a new state. That means bhava.
Yeah, because even now, like people are dressing up, or even the roads or whatever it is, and some people are very particular about all of that. And like people, you know, lay people are dressing up to go somewhere, and they are all, you know, looking at the, you know, putting the clothes properly and arranging it and putting ornaments, and also then, though that is a karma, it's also already a bhava as well. Is that correct if I say that?
We can say so, because I am adorning myself to become someone special.
Yeah, to you know, look really great for that occasion, a bit for that. So
yes.
This is all very closely interwoven.
Exactly.
Though we see it and say it's karma, karma tanha, karma bhava, karma asava, whatever we want to say.
Yeah.
It is still, all of them are interlocked together, and actually if you look deep enough, there is the bhava there all the time. And
yes.
Anicca also, as you mentioned.
Yes.
So they are all interlocked one together, right?
Yes, very true.
Yes, okay, Bhattacharya, I just wasn't quite sure how this other thing worked, you know, the Vijnana Pachya and Amarupa. So I think it's getting clear now. So it's a matter of sitting down and just working it out also. No?
Yeah, actually, that's why, I mean, we can't immediately find a way of doing it during the day-to-day activities. But at least we can start it during our walking session, during our, say, sitting session. So once we are able to reach the state of unassociation, the temporary freedom, at least during that time, try not to think, try not to confuse, try not to have any kind of a doubt, try not to volitionally do anything. Just maintain that freedom. So that gives that actually give a kind of take you to a different domain, because that's why I mentioned. So we know only a world of thinking. We know a world only of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, thoughts, etc. We don't know about a world which is free from any of those. But Buddha indicates the possibility of that. So once through our vipassana practice, once we are able to, at least for a moment, at least for 1 minute, we are able to achieve it, we need to fully be there.
Yes. So it is you have to be aware of it. This is the peaceful mind, the luminous mind. You have to be aware of, even if it's for a minute or 5 minutes or whatever.
Correct.
Then that is a glimpse of nirvana. Would that be right if I said that?
We can say a temporary nirvana.
Yeah. I mean, that is what the Buddha wants us to be, you know. I mean, and I suppose the arahats are always having that mind which is clear and luminous, even though they are having beautiful food and beautiful surroundings and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Their minds are luminous. Mm-hmm. And that is the mind that we have cultivated.
Correct.
That, right?
Correct. Yes.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
There I wanted to also add on. I think when Bhante was talking about whether the Buddha still fed these nutriments and things, I would imagine that arahants, they would still perceive the nutriments in the same way. So, like, they would always feel like pasta is like a flayed cow, just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They would always feel like chetana is like
a pit of burning water.
And vijnana is always like being stabbed.
Mm.
But, like, they're not burning from the fountains on account of that.
Mm.
Whereas Could we
be.
All are.
Mm. Yeah, could be. That's another interesting point mentioned by Venerable Sudhira here. Now we know that when we are taking the edible food, if we do proper contemplation, we can minimize the rising of various defilements. So because we have proper perspective. And similarly, if we consider the arahants, so they have penetrated all these and they don't have any kind of a greed, hatred, delusion. So they may have proper understanding and the proper perspective about all the nutriments. Now, even though when they are using their senses, suppose they are listening, they are hearing, they are, say, seeing, tasting, etc., they are taking that food of contact or the nutriment of contact. If they have the proper perspective, this is very much like a skin cow. So if they have that proper understanding, so then they are not making any defilements out of that. And similarly, if they know there is something to do volitionally, so if they know that this is something like that charcoal pit, and then they are maintaining that understanding, and as a result of that, they don't have any defilements. So something like that we can think, actually, because when one has proper understanding about these four nutriments, so all the defilements are now eradicated, so he is an arahant. But time to time, probably they may have to partake these different nutriments, but with the proper understanding.
This Bhante, this Mano Sanchetana, it's the same as Sankara, is that correct?
Yeah, we can say so. Sankara... Sankhara is a broad term, not only Chetana, but Chetana is the main component of it. When we consider Sankhara, so there are many different kinds of mental objects are indicated. The Chetana is the main one. Therefore, we can consider Chetana as the main sort of Sankhara, though the leader of Sankhara.
So why is that sang? Why have the thing sang added to the chetana, sanchetana?
Sanchetana. Where are you referring?
Mano is the mind, no? Bhante, mano is the mind.
Ah,
sang,
mano sanchetana.
Chetana.
Uh-huh. That's a good question. Actually, I didn't think about it. Mano sanchetana. Probably volitionally thought. I mean, not purposely thought. I look at it. I didn't investigate why the sang is added there.
Yeah, that's alright, Bhante. You can tell
okay.
us next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. I'd like to invite Kanti for the next one.
Bhante, thanks, Jennifer. Bhante, my name is Sam. I just want a clarification from you, the way that I understood this correctly. Kabalinkara ahara is a necessity for one's survival, whereas the other three, like pasahara, manosanchetana ahara, and vijnana ahara, are to be avoided to the extent practical. I mean, it may not be easy unless you achieve arahanthood or something, but is that interpretation or understanding correct?
That's a very interesting question. But I mean, if we consider the typical worldly person, I think for his maintenance, his sustenance, it's a must to have all four types of nutriments. But on the other hand, if we consider an arahant, so we need to see whether he's altogether stopped these four elements, four nutriments. So we can obviously say, no, he requires, say, the edible food till he maintains the body. Then how about the other three? Can he altogether avoid the other three types of nutriments? Difficult question. Maybe I think, as Venerable Sudhir has pointed it out, so probably he can still use these nutriments knowing their proper purpose.
Without getting attached.
Because
the sutta doesn't say anything about it. It describes the four types of ahara.
Yes.
It doesn't say what you're supposed to do. Am I correct?
Yeah, of course. And on the other hand, now if we consider the consciousness and name and form. Now we need to think, is an arahant completely rid of name and form? Is his mind never get caught into name and form, or never get established on name and form? Or is he sometimes use it knowingly, purposely, without getting caught, or without getting to the level of existence, without getting to the level of bhava? But on the other hand, we can argue, avijja pancha sankhara, sankhara pacha vijnana, vijnana pacha namarupa. Now you know that there is a fair contribution coming from avijja, fair contribution coming from ignorance. So only when ignorance is present, there are sankhara, there are the what you call the fabrications going to happen. When fabrications are there, then only the name and form and consciousness have proper some kind of a feat, proper interrelationship. But in the arahant's mind, there is no avijja. So when there is no avijja, so that means he should be capable of maintaining his mind free from name and form in that sense. Isn't it? So the typical conditioned consciousness, the abhisankata vijnana, fairly constructed consciousness can't be in him, because the constructions happen because of avijja. So yes. that I think that is a fair answer, because now after Buddha become fully enlightened, so he declared visankhara gatan chittam. So his mind become completely free from any kind of a construction. So now his mind is not doing any construction. He is experiencing things as it is, without any kind of a deformation, without any kind of personal constructions. In the purest form, he is experiencing things. So that means the arahants also may be experiencing things in the purest form, without making any constructions. So that means the abhisankata vijnana and the corresponding name and form should be avoided, shouldn't be there, can't be there in his mind.
So basically, if you are going towards the final goal, at least minimizing these other
nutriments. Exactly.
Probably a good thing to do if you can do that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhakti.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Teruvan Sannai.
Question for the Jay
Pante. Okay, thank you very much for interesting questions, and it is a very interesting discussion. So with that, we can conclude today's sutta teaching session, and with these sutta teachings and the discussions that we were able to accumulate some merits, we share these merits with all the past relatives, we share these merits with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mam param. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.